Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Pastor Bob Thune, and I am without my normal conversation partners, Mike Kresnick, Dusty White, and Chris Hemmelman. Why am I without them, you ask? Well, we actually already recorded a version of this conversation, and it was like pushing a rope. We just weren't in the groove, and none of us were happy with the outcome. And then as I was driving later in the day, I was like, oh, here's what we should have talked about. And so I am recording this later, and I'm going to do a monologue instead of a conversation, which will lack some elements of creativity and interest because I'm without my wise conversation partners. But hopefully it will provide some perspective for Christians because the topic that we want to talk about is what happened in Charlottesville. I'm referring, of course, to the events in Charlottesville, Virginia on the weekend of August 13th, 2017, where a white supremacist rally turned violent and deadly, and all that that has produced in our national dialogue within the past few weeks. So I want to give a perspective on what happened in Charlottesville, and then I want to give a perspective on what we should do about what happened in Charlottesville. And when I say we, I'm referring, of course, to convictional Christians who are trying to respond with gospel hope and Christian conviction in this moment. If you're like me, what happened for you was something like this. I watched the events, or watched isn't really the right word. I experienced the events of Charlottesville that weekend unfolding on social media primarily. So my Twitter feed was alive with images and posts and responses over the course of the two or three days that the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally was taking place, and then sort of the attendant aftermath of that, including the person who drove the car into the crowd, killing one young woman. All that was coming across my social media feed, and particularly for me, that's Twitter is the one I'm probably most diligent on. And so it was sort of bits and pieces. The danger of social media is you're not getting one narrative. You're sort of getting bits and pieces, snapshots of moments. And so, for instance, there were pictures of armed militiamen marching in with semi-automatic weapons. There were pictures of white supremacists carrying torches. There were pictures of counter-protesters and fights and clashes between white supremacists and counter-protesters. And all this is going on and being posted and retweeted by people all over the place. And so what that gives is it gives a sort of not a very granular picture of what's happening, but rather sort of a snapshots, isolated snapshots. And so what I've tried to do over the ensuing weeks is just to step back and say, okay, what are all the pieces of what happened in Charlottesville? And how do we make sense of all those pieces as Christians? So I want to isolate at least four elements of what happened in Charlottesville. First of all, white supremacy raised its ugly head again. White supremacy is nothing new in America. It has defined the American South for hundreds of years. The Civil War is over, but elements of white supremacy still reign supreme, not just in the South, but in the Pacific Northwest, really all throughout the country. But obviously, white supremacy was strong in the South in the post-Civil War Jim Crow era, and obviously before the Civil War during the era of slavery. And there have always been white supremacist elements in America. Now, I think in recent decades, we've sort of been convinced maybe we're past that chapter in our history. Maybe we're entering a new era of tolerance and togetherness and whatever. Charlottesville showed that's definitely not the case. The elements of the Ku Klux Klan and neo-Nazis and white supremacists and white nationalists are still alive and well and strong in America. And specifically, they were gathering in Charlottesville, Virginia, and sort of rallying around the statue of Robert E. Lee in the center of that city for a reason, and that is because one of the heritages of the old Confederacy is the heritage of white supremacy. And though not every person from the South is a white supremacist, and though not even every Confederate citizen was a white supremacist, the white supremacist movement sort of leans on the mythology of the American South and the old Confederate states as a key symbolic element of its appeal. And so it was not an accident that those white supremacists were gathering where they were in the state of Virginia, which was one of the Confederate states, and around a statue of Robert E. Lee, who is sort of a beloved Confederate figure and who's often associated with elements of white supremacy, though he himself was a complicated man. So first of all, the first element that was present in Charlottesville was a strong, ugly white supremacy. I'll come back to how Christians should respond to that in a moment. The second element that was present, and it's important to break these out in different pieces, the second element that was present was citizen militias. So this is interesting. There were the white supremacists, who were one group. Then there were citizen militia members. These are primarily really strong Second Amendment people. These were the people you saw carrying assault rifles and semi-automatic weapons marching into the square. The interesting thing is that the citizen militias often are not aligned with white supremacist movements. They are something separate, and they wish to be identified as separate. They would not identify with white supremacy, but they do identify with the importance of free speech. And so, and they identify with the impotence of, in some cases, local law enforcement to deal with large clashes. And so oftentimes they'll come out to, in their minds, preserve law and order and sort of guard civil liberties and freedoms of speech. I'll come back to that in a moment. The third element that was present in Charlottesville was counter-protesters of various kinds. And one, I'll call it a fourth element, it's a subset of the counter-protesters, is what's called the Antifa or the anti-fascist movement. So what's interesting is after the event, President Trump, though he initially had come out denouncing white supremacy, made some interesting comments, equivocated the next day and seemed to sort of say, well, there was also the alt-left there, and they were at fault too. And though I think Trump was unwise to say that and should have remained firm in his condemnation of white supremacy, the interesting thing is he's actually correct. I'm reading from the Atlantic September 2017 issue, which has a short article about the Antifa, the anti-fascists. Here's what they say. Since Antifa is heavily composed of anarchists, its activists place little faith in the state, which they consider complicit in fascism and racism. They prefer direct action. They pressure venues to deny white supremacist space to meet. They pressure employers to fire them and landlords to evict them. And when people they deem racists and fascists manage to assemble, Antifa's partisans try to break up their gatherings, including by force. So you have, on the one hand, these far-right, alt-right, white supremacy people, and then you have this alt-left anarchist movement of Antifa who don't believe that the regular forces of law and order, local police and law enforcement officials, are sufficient to counter the threat of white supremacy. And so they feel it's their job to radically intervene, including by force. And so where you might say it this way, this is sort of how the Atlantic parses it, that most of us are sort of classically liberal in our response to white supremacy, meaning we want to defeat it by debate, discussion, argument, and showing that it is not in keeping with the best heritage of America. The Antifa are not interested in liberal dialogue or democracy. They're interested in direct action to oppose by force the forces of white supremacy. So there is this thing called the alt-left, which though it was not there in large numbers, at least not as large numbers as the white supremacists, was there present in Charlottesville, contributing to the chaos. So you had a large number of counter-protesters, a small number of which were associated with these anti-fascist anarchist movements. So if you want to sort of like think about it culturally, you think of like your average like skinhead punk rocker kind of person from the 80s. There's one category of those people that are sort of alt-right, fascist, authoritarian types. And there's one element of those people that are sort of anarchist, anti-authority types. And those two fringe groups were sort of at the heart of what happened in Charlottesville. Going back for a minute to the citizen militia, the citizen militia members exist because they are countering the Antifa. So if we can sort of stack this up, you have the white supremacists who are who they are. You have the anti-fascists who want to counter by force the white supremacists' right to gather and their right to free speech. Then you have citizen militias who exist to oppose the anti-fa. So these citizen militias are very much, they see their job as, if these anti-fascists want to shut down by force the right to free speech, we believe in the Constitution, we believe in the Second Amendment, we're going to protect the right to free speech. We are not white supremacists, we're not endorsing anything that's going on, but we are endorsing the constitutional right to freedom of speech. And so these citizen militias often appear in elements of demonstration to sort of guard and protect, you might say, although we could debate their motives. And then obviously the fourth element that's present in Charlottesville are just your average ordinary citizens, like most of us, who are looking at this and saying, what are we to do with this white supremacist rally, these anti-fa violent leftist protesters, these large measure of counter-protesters, and then these armed militiamen? And the reason I'm breaking it out into these four groups is because on my Twitter feed, these were all coming undiscriminated. So I was seeing these pictures of armed militia members and thinking, gosh, these white supremacists are marching with automatic weapons. Well, it's helpful to realize, no, those are the citizen militia guys, and they're separate from the white supremacists. They're sort of a different subgroup. And then there's all these counter-protesters, but not all these counter-protesters are violent anarchists. Some of them are peaceful people who just want to say, we're not about white supremacy. But then there is this subset of them who are violent anarchists. So when you have the recipe of the chaos and unrest that happened in Charlottesville was the combination of a large number of white supremacists, the anti-fascist militia, or the anti-fascist protesters, the citizen militias, and then the average person looking at all this and wondering what to make of it. How should Christians respond to all this then? That's the question we really want to get to. What does the gospel, what do the scriptures demand of us at this moment in our national history? Because I think for many of us, there was sort of this shock and concern about, are we going backwards in history here? Are we back to sort of chaos, white supremacy? Are we back to these very aggressive, ugly elements of American culture coming to the forefront? We sort of thought we were beyond this. So let me tease out a number of responses I think are incumbent upon Christians. Number one, we ought to and must reject white supremacy. We need to, in the strongest terms, denounce racial superiority of any kind and make it clear that the gospel and the scriptures are opposed to any kind of racial superiority. The reason it's important for us to say that, even as churches, in our case at Coram Deo and First City, that skew majority white, we're not a super multicultural church. But the reason that even as a church of predominantly white people, we need to be very, very clear in our condemnation of white supremacy is because, especially historically, in the American South, it was the pulpits and pews that were often the places where white supremacy and racial superiority was most embraced and trumpeted. And if you don't know your American history enough to know that, it's important that you realize that so that you can see one of the things we must do in these moments is stand in solidarity with our African-American brothers and sisters and say, we condemn racial superiority. It's for that reason that Coram Deo Church put out a statement in the days following Charlottesville that said, as a church, we stand opposed to all forms of racism. All people are created in God's image. Therefore, claims of racial superiority are an affront to God and to human dignity. The gospel of Jesus Christ demands that we repent of racism and turn to Jesus for forgiveness, healing, and hope for ourselves and for our nation. That statement was important for us to make because we want to, in clear and cogent terms, denounce any claim of racial superiority and all forms of racism and say these things have no merit in Scripture and they should not be supported by Christians. It's important for us to denounce them. And especially as we listen to our Christian African-American brothers and sisters who are obviously quite concerned about white supremacy raising its head again and are asking the question, are we going backwards, back to Jim Crow, back to segregation, back to racial superiority? Is the church going to speak with a clear, convincing, prophetic voice in this moment? We want to answer that. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. In the gospel, we stand opposed to racial superiority. So that's the first thing we need to do in light of Charlottesville. But the second aspect is we need to understand the great complexity and polarization of the cultural moment that we're living in. When you have both alt-right white supremacist movements and alt-left anarchist movements, both growing in size and invisibility in our country, it's going to be an interesting, intense time for years to come. Things are increasingly polarized. Neither of these groups is going away anytime soon. And there are dangers for Christians, both from the far right and from the far left. We are not anarchists. We do not believe that that the government is unimportant. We do believe in Romans 13 that we are to submit to the governing authorities, that God has instituted them for stability, that they are the ones, the government is the one who has the right to bear the sword, and that even imperfect governments are still ordained and instituted by God. But we are also opposed to the alt-right and to any claim of racial superiority. And so Christians are going to find ourselves having to oppose on both sides radical ideologies that seek either an aggressive racism or an aggressive anti-government anarchy. Both of those are going to be present in our culture in the years to come, and we're going to need to have a prophetic voice against both. The third thing that I think we need to realize is the necessity of wise, thoughtful, and winsome debate in the moment in time that we live in. What we're seeing, both on the white supremacy side of things, on the anti-fascist side of things, and even among some of the just sort of average counter-protesters, is rather than thoughtful debate, discussion, and disagreement, we're seeing the will to power. We're seeing Nietzsche's philosophy lived out, which is basically whoever can grab power, whoever can dominate the microphone, whoever can dominate the sort of social conversation wins. And so what you're seeing is white supremacists seek to sort of get their message out in brash ways, and anti-fascists seeking to oppose that message in brash, heavy-handed, forceful ways. And what's being lost in all of that is the importance of reasonable, thoughtful care and concern for one another that seeks to love the truth, speak the truth, argue about the truth, proclaim the truth in wise, winsome, thoughtful ways. And so Christians are going to have to land in that camp. We're going to have to be wise and winsome in our public face. The other thing we must do in response to Charlottesville is to reject fear, anxiety, and worry and remain hopeful and confident in the sovereignty of God. As I was watching my social media feed, I was filled with some fear as I just question, what's going on in American society? Why is there racism on the rise? Why is there hostility on the rise? What are we to do with these very aggressive elements that seem to be gaining prominence? And what are we to do with a president who seems to equivocate on denouncing white supremacy and seems to have a hard time saying that neo-Nazis and KKK are not welcome in our society and are not the heritage and the history of America. I found myself feeling some fear, some trepidation about where we're headed. And I think that's true for many of us. I think as we encountered Charlottesville and as we encounter a president like Trump, who's in every way a disruptive sort of figure, I think we have concerns about where are things headed. What's going to come of American society? And what you're seeing culturally is what happens when truth is rejected, and when a society rejects God and revelation and authority and becomes entirely a society of whoever speaks with the loudest voice wins. Alistair MacIntyre, in his book After Virtue, which is a famous book on moral philosophy, essentially says we're left in the West with two possible scenarios. Either we go back to Aristotle and to the classical virtues, which he would say the Judeo-Christian heritage is also a part of. So back to sort of the classical idea of virtue, or we're left with Nietzsche, which is a philosophy of will to power, of whoever has the power gets to decide what's right and wrong. And that's really where you find American society right now, is very much a will to power sort of society, where there are multiple groups clamoring for the loudspeaker and clamoring for power and fighting to be the ones who get to determine what's right and wrong based on whether they can enforce their viewpoint on others. We see this not only on the alt-right, but on the liberal left. This is what's happening with the transgender movement and with the opposition to classic Christian convictions on marriage. Not only is there sort of an openness to disagreement, but there's a forcefulness that seems to be applied to say, we're going to force you to agree with our new morality and our point of view. And so we need to recognize in these moments, in this type of society, it's more crucial than ever that we lean into the classic Christian gospel, the classic conception of the virtues, what it means to be a countercultural people, and that we reject fear and anxiety and rest in the sovereignty, the goodness, and the grace of God, anchored in his promise that he will never leave us or forsake us, and anchored in his promise that his kingdom will prevail, whether or not the United States of America prevails, whether or not our civilization stands or crumbles. Our hope is not in American exceptionalism, but in the kingdom of God. And so for all who find themselves anxious, worried, troubled, fearful, and fretting as a result of the events of Charlottesville in these past few weeks, I think the word of the gospel is a word of hope, a word of confidence, a word of anchor and grounding and security to say, we know who holds the future, we know who holds all of history, and we therefore will be faithful in our mission of proclaiming the gospel and living as a countercultural people. If you're asking, if you're a white Christian, a majority culture Christian, and you're asking, how should I respond to the situation in Charlottesville and to sort of the unrest in our culture? I hope you saw in Coram Deo's statement an example of the kinds of things white Christians need to be saying, quick to express solidarity with our African-American brothers and sisters and saying, we are not okay with any kind of racial superiority. So those are the kinds of things we need to be saying. But more important than that is cultivating friendship and relationship, cultivating personal connections with people who are unlike us, racially different, culturally different, and even politically different, folks from different viewpoints. The only way that we speak meaningfully is when we speak out of relationship. And so for me, a weekend like what happens in Charlottesville forces me to reconnect with my friends who are minority culture folks and say, hey, how can I support you in this moment? What do you need to hear from me? How can I hear what you're feeling, face what you're fearful of with you, and how can I encourage and support you and remind you that you're not alone? And so likewise, every Christian needs to be cultivating real relationships. So I would just say this, great, I hope you posted on Facebook, I hope you posted on social media that you're not a racist and that you're not okay with racial superiority. But more importantly, I hope you had an African-American friend over for dinner. I hope you went and got coffee with the Latino woman who lives down the street. I hope you reached out to immigrant families that you know. I hope you're cultivating personal relationships, especially with Christian brothers and sisters who are of different races and cultures. Not only Christians. You need to have non-Christian friends too, but Christian brothers and sisters of other cultures and races that we can express solidarity in the body of Christ with. So make sure your response to what happens in places like Charlottesville is relational, and personal and not merely language or I don't want to use the word posturing because that has a negative connotation, but I think that that's what it can come down to in situations like this is, oh, I feel the need to say something so that everybody knows I'm not a racist. Well, that's good. I hope you're not a racist. But more important than everybody on social media knowing that is you actually showing that in your relationships and your friendships. So I hope that gives some perspective on how we as Christians ought to respond to the events of Charlottesville. And I would say, from my knowledge of Chris and Dusty and Mike, that this monologue and the things I'm saying here reflect the things that we conversed about together and summarize them cleanly and concisely in ways that hopefully will be helpful to our listeners. That's all for this week. I'd love to hear from you if you have thoughts on Charlottesville and on Christian response to these matters in our culture. We'd love to hear from you at podcast@cbomaha.com. That will do it for this week, and I hope you'll join us next week for another Wednesday conversation. We will tackle the question of Confederate monuments. Should they be removed or not? Another question that's come on the radar as a result of Charlottesville. So I hope you'll join us next week, and until then, we'll see you next time.